You're listening to IdgetCast, Season 1, Episode 15, The Benders. Sam and Dean battle an army of cloned Judd Nelsons. No, wait. Sam and Dean battle an army of future robots that like to drink and bend girders. No, that's not it either. Wait, here it is. Dean teams up with a tough female sheriff to look for Sam when he is kidnapped by a backwoods family who like to hunt humans and use their body parts as trophies.
Welcome back to IdgetCast. I am one of your newbies, Paul Mackey, here in Elk River, Minnesota. And we also have in New York City, David Bushman.
Hello.
And in New Orleans, Yvette.
Hey, y'all.
In Texas, we have John Pavlich.
Greetings.
And back around the country to here in Elk River one more time, next to me, my lovely wife, Darcy.
Hello.
All right, this time we've got the Benders. First off, before we get started, John... What the heck is the Benders?
It is the name of the family.
Oh. Okay, now that makes a lot more sense, I suppose.
So I
saw it's an odd title. I mean, I'm surprised it doesn't have some sort of double meaning.
Yeah, there's no mailbox or anything either.
You wanted to, I don't know if this is necessarily true. I mean, we could be reading too much into this, but if you want, you could say the Benders, as opposed to just being, you know, Bender, their name. The Benders could refer to the fact that, you know, they're just around the bend, or they're crazy, so they've gone around the bend, so they're the Benders. You know, if you want to, it's a bit of a stretch, but it's, you know, it's something.
Okay.
So I noticed some slight parallels to other things. I think a lot of people tend to compare it to the X-Files episode Home, although I think it's in some ways completely different.
Yeah.
And that, I mean, it's creepy, but it's not that creepy.
Well, yeah, I mean, the peacocks in Home are basically living on their own and not wanting to bother anybody until everybody messes in with them, and then that's when they go nuts and kill people.
Right.
They're not doing it on a regular basis.
I mean, haven't killed anybody since the War of Northern Aggression.
Right.
Yes.
So, that also has the whole X-Files tendency to have the outside world encroaching on small-town America, and this really doesn't have anything to do with that.
No.
But it does have... allegedly inbred hillbillies.
No, there are no hillbillies
in Minnesota.
There are snowbillies. We do not have hillbillies. We have snowbillies.
Okay, thank you very much. So yeah, I mean, home is something that is going to get compared to obviously the Most Dangerous Game, which is a reference that goes all the way back to, I think the original story of the Most Dangerous Game was from the 30s, if I'm not mistaken, from the pulps in the 30s.
Maybe.
Mm-hmm.
And then also, I saw a strong connection, obviously, to the Torchwood episode "Countryside."
Oh, that one was creepy.
But I did use the air date listed on this box set that we have in front of us, and then looked up the episode "Countryside." It actually airs eight months after this episode.
Oh, really?
So if anything, they were inspired by the Supernatural episode. Probably not. It's probably just a parallel development.
Yeah.
I don't know whether I should spoil the Torchwood episode. Oh, okay, here. If you don't want to be spoiled on an early episode of Torchwood, only go forward about 5 seconds, and I'll explain real quick what the parallel is. And the parallel is that the people in Countryside are also just people, and that they're cannibals.
Yummy.
Ah.
Just like Alfred Packer.
Sure. Okay. So there's that. I see the parallels all through there. And then the last thing I wanted to say was that the timing of this episode was great, because if we had done this 3 weeks earlier...
Oh, my God.
We took a three-night camping trip to our lake cabin on Lake Leander, which is roughly 25 miles north of Hibbing. And it's a undeveloped cabin in the middle of the woods with no facilities or anything, and once you turn out the lantern at night, you're in the dark.
That's it. It is really, I mean, I don't know if you guys have ever been, like, out in the middle of nowhere with no electricity, nothing. I mean, I'm sure that that's becoming more and more rare, but it is really creepy, and the human mind does really horrible things to you in the dark.
So you are likely grateful that we did not watch this episode before that trip.
I am super grateful. I mean, we even, like, went up there and we told spooky stories with the kids. You know, like the, don't eat the soup.
That was not a spooky story. That's a bad joke.
And then, you know, the family legend of the rare fanged deer.
Right.
So, yeah.
Well, here's something worth mentioning about this episode. It was written by John Chaban, who was also a writer for The X-Files and went on to write and direct a movie called Rest Stop, which deals with very similar material. Like, it's basically about someone getting terrorized by, like, this backwoods killer type person.
Hmm. I love that movie.
Mm-hmm.
I've never seen it.
It's good stuff.
Hmm.
I know of it.
What this makes me think of most of all is which also came out around this time, is Wrong Turn, which is a movie I like quite a bit.
I think I've seen Wrong Turn.
It stars Eliza Dushku.
Okay, yeah. That's why I recognize the name, but I haven't seen it.
Yeah, I've totally seen it. I just looked it up. All right. It's like a total, like, Z-grade horror movie, but it's good. It's fun.
I think it's better than that.
Well, I don't know. The way I'm not going to go in and spoil Wrong Turn, but there's some pretty bad makeup. That's not a spoiler.
Really? Because the makeup was done by Stan Winston, so...
I think it's awful. Oh, my God.
Really?
Yeah.
Maybe we'll have to talk about that at some point off mic.
Aww.
Yeah.
I was enjoying the makeup conversation.
I know.
Yes, thank you.
You're a makeup person, but...
yeah.
David, I would call you the most expert X-Files fan. What did you think of the comparison that people make to Home?
I think your comments about the comparison are dead on. I mean, it's definitely evocative of it, but there are significant digressions or diversions. So I think you pretty much said it. I mean, you know, Home is a, you know, and I think it's an iconic X-Files episode. I don't think that this in any way reaches that kind of
No.
It never standard. Did. It didn't give me the same, you know, feeling that I got when I watched Home.
And also Home was a lot more, there was a lot more of it. I mean, they tried to have a creepy atmosphere throughout this, but Home was definitely more of an atmosphere. There was definitely, like, a pervading sense of dread throughout the episode, too.
Right.
Oh, yeah, sure.
Yeah, they did some of that, too, I think, even before they get to the meat of the story here. I love that scene outside the bar, you know, with the cat and the fog. And
yeah.
I thought that was really nice, but that was all sort of kind of meat of the story.
Right. And I was definitely thinking something supernatural at that point.
Yeah.
I was like, it's Krampus or something. You know, it was...
Krampus.
I figured it was something like that, you know.
I thought it was really funny, too, when Sam pulls out this little tiny flashlight, because I think in X-Files, I think that they use these, like, $7,000, I forget what they call them, xenon flashlights or something like that. I mean... and here's Sam pulling out. I mean, I think we know who had the budget.
it almost feels like a reference.
Maybe. It's a mag light.
Like, it's just a little... We got a pen light.
At the gas station.
And I guess the one last thing I'll say is that it probably means nothing to most people, but northern Minnesota and Canada are very similar looking. I mean, it was mostly dark and foggy, but we've seen foggy Minnesota recently too.
Oh,
so.
Yeah, that was super creepy too. So
I think if we're all ready, we can jump into the in-depth discussion of the meat of the episode.
Mm-hmm.
Let's do it.
Let's go, Paul.
Okay, we open in Hibbing, Minnesota. where a boy is watching a monster movie late at night. A loud vehicle passes outside. As that seemed, that sounded exactly like a loud vehicle to me personally. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Even without before noticing the rest, knowing the rest of the episode. Outside, a man is taking trash to the dumpster. The man seems spooked by a sound in the dark, and there's another scraping sound. He looks under a car. There's a scuffle, and he is dragged screaming under the car. And we hear some more noises.
Mm-hmm. Can I say something?
Okay.
There's no explanation for how they get him under the car. Because seriously, I wouldn't even fit under a car, and I am not a big person.
Well, it was an older model car.
Still.
All right.
Okay. That's all I have to say.
Yeah, it seemed a little unnecessary to drag him under a car. Why would you drag
but
a person under a
car? But that's why I thought that it would have to be something smaller and stronger. Well, you know, it kind of gave me that feeling of, oh, well, that's what, you know, it's a, you know, vampire rabbit
well, in
or
re-
whatever the hell.
In retrospect, it felt like a mislead to be a mislead and not, there was no practical reason for dragging him under the car.
Exactly, because they could just pull him in the truck or the van or whatever the hell, and that's it. I'm sorry, my bad language. Sorry.
Oh, that's not a bad language. Okay. That'll pass on a clean podcast.
Sorry.
I don't think we have a clean tag on this. We don't have an explicit, but we don't have a clean.
Okay,
so
I try to behave myself.
You're cool. Next up, there's a woman that's telling two state troopers she doesn't know why they need to ask questions because she's already spoken to the police. And the more the boy is telling the story, the more he believes it. Obviously, she does not. But the troopers, as we see, are actually Sam and Dean. And they say the story sounds like a matter for the state police. Sam tells the boy to tell his story no matter how crazy it might seem. And he says he was watching TV late and heard something that sounded like a monster. His mom interjects to ask what it was he was watching, and that was Godzilla vs. Mothra, which is Dean's favorite. Evan did not see the monster, but he saw it drag Mr. Jenkins underneath the car, and when it left, it made a whining growl sound. At the bar, or at a bar, I should say, Sam says that the local police did not rule out foul play, and Dean thinks it could just be a kidnapping, but Dad's journal does highlight the area with local folklore of a dark figure taking people in the night, and the county does have more missing persons per capita than any in the state. Any other county of the state.
I felt like he was, like, straight up, like, insulting her with that, like, oh, you don't ever find your missing persons. I don't know, it seemed like a weird...
Oh, later on? Yeah. Mm-hmm. How many of those people are you actually finding? You incompetent police people? Dean points out that most phantom attackers snatch people from their beds. But Sam does point out there are all kinds, and Dean concedes that they should ask around in the morning. Sam wants to head off to a motel, and Dean wants to hang out for another round first. Sam says they need an early start, so he heads to the car while Dean uses the head. Sam hears a noise in the parking lot and looks around with his little flashlight. Under one of the cars, he is nearly taken out by an orange tabby cat.
Wow.
Cindy.
And next we see Dean come out. He passes by the cat, but then he finds Dad's journal disconcertingly where Sam had set it down, but no Sam. Not in the car or anywhere. He asks some people passing by, takes note of some traffic cameras, but Sam does not appear. The next morning, Dean is at the local sheriff's office, and I will say this once and then drop this particular point. It's a nitpick of nitpicks, but there's no such thing as Hibbing County. Hibbing is in St. Louis County, but I suppose that could get confusing in TV, especially when they reference the city of St. Louis a little bit later on, about 5 minutes later. But it is St. Louis County, named after the St. Louis River that flows through it.
Right.
He's posing as Officer Washington of the state police. And he's looking for his cousin, Sam. The woman at the sheriff's office, who we don't actually find out the name of for a long time in this episode, the woman at the sheriff's office checks records for Sam Winchester and notes that Dean, the brother who was suspected of murder, died in St. Louis. Yay, continuity!
Yay!
I called that continuity out earlier. Yay. When that episode happened, I was like, this has got to come up later or else I don't respect these people.
You know what's weird, though?
Okay.
There isn't a picture of Dean. That's weird.
Yeah, you'd think there'd be a photo.
Yeah, I was thinking that too.
If you'd been a suspect of something, there'd be at least the sketch.
Yeah, but what year was this?
I think there would have been a copy of that sketch because there was a copy that she's like, had a photo of the officer later on her car computer.
Yeah, I suppose.
Yeah, I think this is just an example of you know, doing what's convenient to advance the storyline.
Oh, sure.
That's right. Mm-hmm. Sometimes you gotta.
Yeah, it would have been shorter and different at that point.
It would have been no episode, man.
Yep, that would have been it. That's it. In jail. The end.
She takes
like
no...
Dean's going to jail and Sam is gone forever.
Yes.
The end.
One more wrinkle I didn't have time to go through in the 43 minutes.
Great.
She notes that he hasn't been reported into any hospitals, that Dean asks after the traffic cameras nearby. So she says that he ought to fill out a missing persons report while she goes to the county works department to look at the footage. Dean tries to impress on her that whatever happens, he's definitely getting Sam back. And after that, we see Sam waking up in a cage. He sees a guy in the nearby cage unconscious. And this is Jenkins, so he doesn't confirm that at this point, because mm-hmm. he's unconscious.
They have electricity up there. That's pretty good, huh?
They have electricity on the lake. We just don't happen to have it at our cabin.
I know.
And they're probably right over by there.
Probably. It could have been Anderson.
It could have been Anderson's place, right. There was no lake.
Yeah.
Yeah, let's not malign Anderson on an actual podcast.
I have plenty bad to say about Anderson.
That cabin is being listed for sale, so.
So sad.
Okay. Dean's on a park bench. And the woman from the sheriff's office has some of the images that she found. In one, around the time that Sam left the bar, there is a pickup with a camper topper. And she notes the new-looking plates, which Dean suggests might be stolen. Now, I've got two nitpicks. One is a nitpick just locally. In Minnesota, you're required to get new license plates every 7 years. So that's a sign of nothing in Minnesota, actually.
Great.
But besides that, the shaky bit of logic that I have that is actually a shaky bit of logic for the episode, if the truck has stolen plates, then it has to be the reason that someone was kidnapped. Right? Right?
Mm.
That's got to be it. They have stolen plates. They got to be kidnappers.
I don't know. My stolen plates aren't about being a kidnapper.
You shouldn't say that on podcast.
Just kidding.
So after that shaky bit of logic, Dean notices a van passing by that has belt issues and asks whether she'd call that a whining growl. So then he sort of figures out what the monster is from the kids' report.
It's a 98 Saturn.
No. Oh. It's a pickup truck with a camper topper.
Well, you know, same thing.
Okay. Sam is trying to beat the hell out of his cage, but to no avail, and Jenkins awakes. He doesn't know where they are, but he says it smells like the country. Poop. Sam confirms that this is Alvin Jenkins and says that he's been looking for him, and Jenkins doesn't think this is much of a rescue attempt. Sam points out that Dean is also looking for them, but Jenkins doesn't take much comfort in that. As Sam asks what took them, the captors enter and feed Jenkins. Sam notices they're just people. Jenkins says they feed him once a day, but otherwise don't seem to appear very much, and he seems to think that they want him to become a bumbling sidekick to a comic book supervillain. But I might have misinterpreted that.
Yeah, what? You are super dorky.
No, I'm funny.
Dorky.
Somebody out there in headphones right now laughed at that.
Dorky.
But obviously none of the rest of our crew.
Dork.
Thank you.
Welcome.
John, was that respectable even if you didn't chuckle?
He's a big dork. It's okay to say it.
He could be two things. He's forky.
Sam works on pulling on the conduit attached to his cage. Meanwhile, Dean and the lady from the sheriff's office, still not named, reach the last traffic camera that shows the truck, and the next was 50 miles away. She says lots of places in there have their own roads. But at this point, her little dashboard computer beeps, and she reveals that she ran his badge number. His badge number came up stolen. And there's a picture of Officer Washington. Dean almost makes some lame lies, but he argues that they really still should try to find Sam prior to arresting him. He agrees to go peacefully. She does take a little look at a picture in her car of somebody in her, and then she agrees to find Sam first.
Yeah, that picture sort of if I'm with you here, that picture sort of reminded me how little. Is that the picture of the cop that you're talking about, Paul?
Yeah, the picture of the cop with somebody.
Remind me, there's so few people of color in this show. it's really.
Oh yeah, no, I was talking about how she was looking at the picture of her and her brother. But yes.
Oh, okay, sorry.
But that did come up just a moment earlier.
And you're right. Yeah, there are so few people of color. You're 100% correct on that.
Yeah, like last, what was it, that one that where like Route 666 or whatever? Yeah. I think those are the only black people we've like really ever seen on this show.
And there they hit you over the head with it. There
kind of felt like a token episode at that point. Okay, well we have to have Yvette sign off for the night.
Aww,
she's gonna move on to her night. Do we want to have Yvette phone in a rating and everything later on the voicemail line, or?
Yeah, I can totally just record my thing and just send it to y'all.
Yeah, okay. You can give us a who won, who lost, and a rating.
Yeah, that sounds perfect.
And if you like to, a quote.
I don't even have a quote for this one, but I definitely have a rating and
who won, who lost.
Okay, and we'll shoot you our ratings so that we can...
So we can keep our spreadsheet going.
Yes.
Yeah, I'll put it in the spreadsheet.
Thank you. All right.
Okay.
All right, y'all. Have a good night.
Thank you, Yvette, and good night.
Bye, Yvette.
Okay, bye.
Good night. Good night.
All right. So she does. She sees the photo of Officer Washington, and it's obviously not Dean.
No.
And then when Dean pleads his case and says they really ought to still go find Sam first, and he'll go peacefully later on, she glances at the photo on her visor or whatever that has the picture of her and what we find out is her brother.
I have a question. Do we remember Dean stealing Washington's credentials?
No, because
we don't remember that.
That's a he's a Minnesota State Police officer.
Didn't he steal? I assume you remember them stealing somebody's credentials at some point.
They may have, but it was not in Minnesota.
Okay.
So that happened at some point off camera.
Okay.
Jenkins tells Sam to give up on escape, and Sam succeeds in getting the conduit to break loose. Jenkins' bad attitude is starting to grate on me. But just at that moment, Jenkins' cage pops open. They think maybe it was a short when Sam broke the conduit loose. Sam smells a trap, but Jenkins says, "I'm going to go for help." Jenkins sneaks outside, finds a knife on the ground, and runs.
Sounds like Lassie saying, "Don't go!
Don't go!
Don't go!"
In the woods, he hears some whoops in the distance, and then he breaks into a run and is hit hard. The men have club-like spear instruments, and they spear him. He gets away, but there's a tripwire across the trail, and he falls. And from the cage, Sam can hear his dying screams.
By the way, that spearing in the leg is pretty nasty.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That looked good or bad. It looked bad, but it looked good.
Looked very painful.
If you know what I mean. Dean asks the cop why she's still helping him, and she reveals her brother Riley vanished 3 years back. And she
Riley?
I thought that too. And she knows what it's like to feel responsible for someone. Dean has her pull over at a turnoff that he spots. And she says she'll check it out alone, but Dean insists on coming with. She makes him promise to not get involved when he comes back there. He promises, and then she wants to shake on it. But then she cuffs him to the car when he does. He says she'll still need his help, but she says she can handle it. She gets to the end of the entry road, and she spots the pickup truck. She knows she has the right place. She knocks on the door, and a young girl answers. And finally, we know that this is Deputy Kathleen, instead of just the woman from the sheriff's office. She introduces herself as Deputy Kathleen. The young girl, Missy, says that her mom is dead and that her dad isn't around. Kathleen has her look at a picture of Sam, which she does, and then she smiles oddly and says, "That's going to hurt." Hopefully that's not anybody's quote. She says, "That's going to hurt." And Daddy is there, hitting Kathleen in the face with a shovel. He tells Missy to go get her brothers. Dean spots a small antenna mounted on the car roof, and he reaches for it as he hears the truck approaching. He manages to snag the antenna and begins to pick the lock as the brothers approach and escapes in the nick of time. In the cages, Kathleen comes to, and Sam makes her acquaintance. She tells him that his cousin is there with her, but he is cuffed to her car. But right at that moment, the door opens and Dean enters, trying to get them out while getting the score from Sam. Dean reports there's lots of old cars hidden there, probably from other people that they've taken, and Kathleen asks after a black Mustang, which Dean confirms that he saw and realizes it was her brother's. He finds out that the automatic locks need a key, and he goes out to find it. In the basement, he finds some canning jars. The grayish matter in there is not spoiled peaches.
No. Now, back to the cage scene. I was like, okay, so this is where Sam's gonna do the bending.
Oh. Yeah, because it was still called the Benders, so is he gonna...
I was like, oh, now he's gonna bend, because I thought something. He got that bracket, and I'm like, now he's gonna make, like, the key, or something, but it didn't happen. I was so disappointed.
You have to wait longer for the telekinesis to pay off again.
I was waiting.
We're still waiting for Meg to come back.
Yes, and Meg needs to come back. There's elements out there still. We're 15 episodes
Shut up,
in.
Meg.
We're 15 episodes into 22 or 20, 21, 22, something like that.
Remember that little person I had in daycare, Meg?
No, rather not. There are a bunch of Polaroids on display. It's the hunters with their kills, but it's not deer kills or bear kills. They're killed people. This includes a recent photo of Jenkins. He ventures upstairs where a jaunty tune is playing on an old phonograph. He makes his way toward the kitchen, where someone is doing something, probably disarticulating Jenkins.
See, I always thought the sound design on that was weird, because, like, yeah, you're supposed to think, like, oh, he's cutting up a body, but it sounds like he's sawing into a pipe or something.
But have you ever heard somebody saw into a bone?
Like a metal saw on bone could sing like that.
Mm-hmm.
No comment.
You know, we're from Minnesota. I just stepped there a little while ago. I'm just kidding.
We use beetles to make sure that the flesh comes off of our bodies.
That's right. The Lady of the Lake.
He runs into a sort of wind chime or mobile made of human jawbones. Dean finds one of their hunting spears as Daddy starts to saw something in the kitchen. And Dean spots the keys and picks them up next to the jar of teeth.
Jar of teeth.
He turns and finds Missy, tries to shush her and says that he won't hurt her. And she says, I know, and pins his jacket to the wall with a knife, shouts for Daddy. Dean breaks free and battles the brothers, but Daddy sneaks up behind him and clunks him on the head with a frying pan.
There's a lot of clunking on the head.
There's been some clunking on the head in this episode.
Clunk.
Clunk, unconscious. Clunk, unconscious. It's very simple. You just clunk them hard enough, they go unconscious instantly.
Who knew?
Just once. Dean comes too. He's bound to the chair. The brothers want to hunt him. And Dean gets a full picture of this most dangerous game they're playing. Daddy talks about all the hunting that he's done and swears that people are the best. They give the prey a weapon, a fighting chance. Only take one or two a year, never sloppy enough to bring around the law. They try to get info out of Dean about whether he's a cop and whether there's other people likely to come. Dean gets mouthy, as he does. They want to know if anyone else is likely to come looking, and they mean to torture the info out of him. But they also want him to pick between Kathleen and Sam about who to hunt next. They burn him with a poker and threaten to take an eye.
You mean they burn his jacket with a poker?
They burn his jacket with a poker. And there's a potential close-up eye trauma for the second time in 2 weeks.
Eye trauma?
Eye trauma. Here's an eye. Here's something hot. Or see, here's something dangerous near your eye.
Yay.
Dean tells them to take Sam, and Daddy sends the brother, Lee, to go do it. But not to give him a fighting chance. Just shoot him in the cage.
Shoot him in the cage.
And then to shoot Kathleen, too. Because they're going to tidy all this mess up. Sam sees him coming and grabs that conduit bracket he broke loose earlier. And as Lee takes his shot, Sam distracts him with the bracket. Dean threatens Daddy, and out in the cages, Sam wrestles Lee and knocks him out. But the gun is jammed. Daddy leaves Missy to watch Dean.
Moral to the story, always clean your firearms.
There you go. She taunts him with her knife as she's watching Dean. Daddy and Jared, the other brother, find nobody in the darkened cages. Sam and Kathleen have stolen the fuses for the lights. Kathleen appears headed for a cabinet, and Sam is in the hayloft. Daddy pursues Sam, and Jared shoots up that cabinet, but Kathleen wasn't in there and gets the jump on him. Sam flees from Daddy. Kathleen is thrown by Jared, and when Jared tries to shoot Sam, he hits Daddy instead. Sam then knocks Jared out and locks Lee and Jared in the cages, and Kathleen has Daddy at rifle point, sending Sam to look for Dean, and I think we're pretty clear that Sam is pretty well aware of what might happen next. At which point, Daddy threatens Kathleen. She asks why he killed her brother, and I can't get around the quote, so hopefully no one has it. He pretty much just says, "'Cause it's fun," and he laughs maniacally, and she shoots him. Wrapping it up, Sam and Dean say Missy's locked in the closet, and Kathleen says that she shot Daddy while he was trying to escape. Which the brothers obviously clearly believe. After calling backup, she suggests that the boys get gone before the help arrives, or before the backup arrives, and they got to walk out of there. They're pushing their luck asking for any more favors. Just make sure you duck if you see a squad car. And that's pretty
I thought it was odd the way Dean just kind of dropped out of the end of the story. He was off camera all that time, and then he comes back and they said, "Well, what happened to Missy?" And sort of talks about it.
Yeah.
We locked her in the closet.
We locked her in the closet. I got out.
Yeah, I mean, he was gone for a stretch of time there. That seemed kind of strange.
I'm guessing that there was probably extra footage.
There could be that
they had to cut for time.
There could be, or there could be that obviously what happened is one of the two boys hit a 13-year-old girl in the head. And they're not going to show someone hit a 13-year-old girl in the head. So they're like, we'll just have this happen off camera because we're not going to show either of these guys hitting a 13-year-old girl in the head.
Yeah, because that would be not very nice, even though she's threatening him with a knife. So now, Paul, I just have to say, what did you think of the southern accents on the backwoods Minnesotan boys?
I don't know.
I didn't talk to a single person up there that speaks like that.
No, they definitely should have been more Fargoized. The Iron Range of Minnesota is one of the more Fargo-y sounding places
in
the state.
It really is, because in Fargo, no, they do not sound like that. But on the range, they
sound like that. Yeah, they do. So, but
the Coen brothers are from Minnesota, right?
Oh, absolutely. Yep. Yeah, they're from St. Louis. Yes.
You know, has Supernatural been set yet in Texas or New Orleans?
I haven't seen it yet, I don't think. They had Oklahoma.
Because I'm waiting for them to come to New York City, and I'm not holding my breath, but I think they'll be in Texas or New Orleans in Minnesota, obviously, before New York.
Well, I can't remember specifically. However, the show does tend to follow a particular theme of being a sort of Midwest cross-country kind of, you know, it's like they tend to take place more in a lot of the, Little America.
Yeah,
kind
they're definitely
spaces.
Backroads people. We haven't seen them take anything yet.
Right. Well, would you if you were traveling with a whole bunch of weapons
and fake
cards?
IDs and such? Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah.
Plenty of demons in New York, guys.
All right. Actually, right before I watched this episode, during the period right before it, I was like, okay, well, you know, they've been to Wisconsin, but, you know, when are they going to get around to Minnesota? And my question was answered right away. But
yeah. I mean, they went to Colorado really early, too, so.
And then the other thing that I get curious about, it's definitely like a Backroads Americana series, but I wonder whether there's ever anywhere else on Earth that they end up in 10 seasons. I would hope that they would eventually end up in at least Canada or Mexico.
Well, they can't get over the border.
Yeah, they have no credentials, and this is definitely post-9/11.
And you and I both know that they check your trunk when you go to Canada.
Yeah. I mean, even in the easy old days.
And then they can't fit it all back in either. That was pretty funny.
Even in the easy old days before 9/11, they did all
that. Was
that
before or after 9/11?
Totally. We never went there after in the car, did we?
Yeah, we did.
No, we didn't.
No?
No.
I don't remember.
Yeah, so anyway, I do get curious a little bit about what the limits of their conceit of their backroads Americana story they have going on with both what David mentions with the getting to New York City or a big city, mm-hmm. and then whether they get anywhere else other than America.
Yeah, did they search my purse? I don't remember.
Sam and Dean?
No, the border guards. Do you remember?
I think they did a look through.
Did they really?
I think so.
Okay. I mean, I wouldn't have like held back. I didn't have anything in there, clearly, but
that's my syringe and that's my weed, officer.
You want some? It's reefer, do you want? Please, you remember?
Nobody knows that song.
Nobody knows that song?
It's a little one-off song from Britain. Okay. It's a reefer.
Okay.
The reefer.
Yeah,
song.
I don't know it.
Oh man.
It's by a band called Mindless Drug Hoover.
Not familiar, no.
Oh gosh.
Oh, if I didn't avoid copyright infringement on this podcast, I'd play that. It's fun.
You could ask for permission.
Yeah, I just have to find out who Mindless Drug Hoover is, what label they're on.
They're probably dead.
With a name like Mindless Drug Hoover, do you think that anything could befall them?
I do not know.
All right. Well, we are at the end of the episode summary, so we are ready for who won? Sam versus
who
Dean.
Won? I think I'm going to say that Dean won.
Yeah?
He held a Yarrow teeth. I mean, come on.
It's my awesome. Yarrow teeth.
It's my Yarrow teeth. They didn't say it right.
I thought this was Dean's episode until they just disappeared at the end, but I'll go with Dean, too. He also does have a lot of good lines, I thought.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, he's definitely the one who kept at it and kept at it and kept at it.
Yep.
We may have.
Yeah, I'm going to say Dean because he saved the day and he rescued Sam and you know, he convinced this sheriff to, like, you know, look the other way and bring him along and all that good stuff. So
yeah, but you know, she had her reasons. All worked out.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Well, we could do a quick quote segment. We do have a ton of feedback to get to after the quotes, so we should probably just each go for one if we each got one.
Yeah, I've got
one. Those guys go first.
Sure.
John?
Tell me, any other cops going to come looking for you? Eat me. Oh, no, no, no. No, wait, wait, wait. You actually might.
Yeah, Dean had a lot of great lines like that. The one I went for was the exchange that Paul alluded to over the Godzilla movie, because I thought that, you know, he was legitimately interested in talking about that in the middle of this, you know, investigation. Mm-hmm. And I think it just really was kind of a window into Dean's personality that he's can get sort of sidetracked like that if something, you know, something like a Godzilla movie. And his line about, you know, Sam liking the remake, I thought was pretty funny.
Which is, of course, the Matthew Broderick remake at this point.
Of course.
Yeah.
I've got Dean in the cuffs. I gotta start carrying paper clips.
You would think he would have a lock pick.
Yeah, I would have thought that he'd have a pick set.
Oh, he would have that in his sock. Just...
And, I mean, heck, Magnum carried a lock pick set everywhere he went.
Yeah.
And he was wearing those tiny little shorts.
Oh, yeah. And that baseball.
Well, yeah, maybe he kept his pick set in the baseball game.
That totally would make sense, wouldn't it? Okay, I've got Dean. With our usual playmates, there's rules, there's patterns, but with people, they're just crazy. I'll say it again. Demons I get, people are crazy.
Yeah, that's two quotes.
I'm sorry.
That's all right. All right, we've got a lot of feedback, and I'm going to have... Oh, you want me to read that one?
Yeah,
okay,
that's a good one.
Alvin Jenkins. I told everybody one. This is two okay. Now. Well, you took two, too. Alvin Jenkins, I'm waiting. Sam, waiting for what? Ned Beatty time, man.
That's a good one.
I still think my bumbling sidekick to the supervillain was fun.
You are such a dork.
We've already covered this.
All right, we got...
He's forky.
All right. Well, we've got, three bits of feedback?
Hey,
three or four? And I'm going to pop one up and make somebody read it.
Can I read Heidi's first?
You can read
Heidi's. I'll read Heidi's. Hey, guys! This episode title sounds like a drunken party or something. I like how we come in with Sam and Dean already there and involved. No preamble or discussion of why they're going there. There's a nice change to have Sam and Dean separated, and also to have Dean searching for Sam. They're usually the hunters, sometimes the hunted, but they don't usually get caught. There's also some good interaction between Dean and the policewoman. She's the clever one, handcuffing him to the car. Reminded me of Castle and Beckett, right, John? I like
that. Yes.
It's true what Dean said about supernatural things being predictable, but people are just crazy. Some of the movies that scare me the most have no ghosts or monsters like When Strangers Call. It's something that could actually happen, which makes it way worse. I always forget what this episode is about, but it's a pretty good one. It's like the continuation of what happened in that scary X-Files family. Creepy. Anyway, until next time, Heidi. Thanks, Heidi.
Thanks, Heidi.
All right. Next up, we have Fry.
And Bender.
Yeah, Fry and Bender, right?
That's a good show.
And I'm going to make John read it.
All right. Right. Whoops.
This part's amusing.
I'm having a copy and paste here.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Oop, bonk. Sorry, Paul.
All right. Fry says, "This one is really messed up, and I love it. It kind of reminds me of Home in a few ways, mixed with The Most Dangerous Game and a dash of Countryside. I find that humans being the bad guys is always more scary and disturbing than ghosts and monsters. The song playing on the phonograph in the kitchen is Sweet and Low Down by George Gershwin. I also must add that I completely disagree with Dean that Godzilla vs. Mothra is the best Godzilla movie. It's good, but not even in my top three. Anyway, this classic creepy episode is one of the greats. 8 out of 10, and he stole my rating system.
Oh, no!
I'm not going to say it just yet. I'm going to wait until...
Okay, okay. You can say it later.
Yeah.
All right. Deborah tells us, this episode did cause a few shudders when I watched it the first time when it aired, and it is one of my favorite all-time episodes. I still get excited when it's going to be on TV, even though I have the DVDs. It's the first time they come across something different from their usual playmates and deal with a human evil. As Dean succinctly puts it, demons I get, people are crazy. One image I love from this is the moment they hold the poker up to Dean's eye and you see the reflection. A little bit Raiders of the Lost Ark, right?
Yeah!
I totally get
that.
And we do have one more piece of feedback from Facebook. Carol says, the dangerous, crazy, inbred hillbillies has never been a trope I was fond of. But if you're going to have an episode about humans acting like monsters, it seems like the way to go. It is, after all, pretty much a non-supernatural urban legend. With that in mind, I did not enjoy the bad guys, though they served their purpose and I could ignore them, mostly. The cop seemed pretty unbelievable, even with her desire to find her brother. That said, I enjoyed Dean's interaction with her. You guys were wondering if they were going to acknowledge in later episodes that Dean died in the shapeshifter episode, and now you know. The series makes mistakes, but it tries. I like that the boys are thrown off by the expectation of them being supernatural monsters, and they turn out to be just human. I love Dean's assessment of humanity, which I will not quote, but I hope one of you will. There are people who object to human bad guys. It is called supernatural, after all. I think it makes sense that now and then the boys might misread the situation. I think it keeps us all on our toes and reminds us that this is not a world where every bad thing that happens is because of something supernatural. There's a mixture out there, even if we do not see it because Sam and Dean are all about the monsters. Also, one of the difficult elements of their job is figuring out when it is their kind of problem, when it is not. Dean thought the shapeshifter was not their problem at all at first, but it was. Here they assumed it was their kind of problem when it was not. That works for me. They both win, in my opinion. Dean gets his brother back without ending up in jail, and Sam gets saved. Win-win. Keep up the good work. And
yeah, there's some really good points in there.
Thank you, Deborah.
I agree.
Way to go, Deborah. Awesome.
Well, we seem to have an awesome number of fans starting to give us some feedback, and we really appreciate that.
Yeah.
Hey.
Hey, I have a great rating.
Oh, you have? Are you jumping at it?
Can I?
Yeah, I think you can. I think we may as well.
Okay, I'm going to give it 8 out of 10 Samuel's brackets.
Oh, my God.
Wow.
It's great the word you're going with. All right. I really like this episode. Mostly because it is unique in the context of supernatural, in that it's not supernatural. In the previous episode, we had parental figures, adults, beating up on a kid, and it wasn't until later that they created this supernatural monster in a way. So I like that. I think the production design of this episode is fantastic. There's a lot of great stuff going on in the background in the set. I think the little girl is very creepy, even though she doesn't get a whole lot of screen time. She makes the most of it. I'm going to give this 8 out of 10 jars of teeth.
Jar o' teeth.
Well, I'll say that. I 15 episodes in, I hate to be the negative one, but 15 episodes in, I'm definitely expecting more from the show than I'm getting. And I think that, this was a little bit of, this just struck me as something that I've seen before. And I just didn't, I did like the fact that they veered from their tradition in not going the supernatural route. That was interesting. I just thought that, they could have come up with something maybe a little bit more original. So I'm just giving this 5 dueling banjos.
I thought they were really, they were really working hard on this episode. I really felt like they really put a lot into it, whether they actually ended up, choosing an original plot idea to begin with or not. They definitely were working hard. I think they were shooting to have a home of their own. you know, with this episode. I mean, the parallels that are there are pretty obvious, and I think they were pretty much you know, working to go that way.
But it didn't bother me.
It didn't bother you that there was a similarity?
No. I was like, yes, you know, you guys know that I love this stuff and that I eat it up with this fork. So
okay.
Can you eat it up with a bent spoon?
Exactly.
There you go.
So they know me. There you go.
I mean, I definitely appreciated the effort they put into it. The originality wasn't all there, and I'm going to end up giving it a pretty, for me, middle of the road rating of 7 jarred brains out of 10.
Come on, Samuel's bracket. You get it.
Yeah, I get it.
We all do.
So sorry. I couldn't help it.
We're fans of genre television. We know what you're talking about.
Okay.
Hey, idjits. Is that the proper terminology? I'm not sure. This is Yvette, and I am calling with my ratings and who won, who lost, etc. for the episode The Benders. Unfortunately, I had to duck out early on this episode, because of life concerns, but that's not important. So I thought this episode was good. I liked that we ended up with killers who weren't actually supernatural in any fashion. That was actually sort of exciting. But I sort of already talked about that in the commentary that I did. But anyway, so just real quick, I definitely thought the winner of this episode was Dean, basically because Sam didn't really have that much to do except be caught in a cage. It would have been nice for that telekinesis or whatever we saw last episode to come out, but I guess it wasn't going to. So I gave this one 8 out of 10 whining growls. All right, y'all, I will talk to y'all soon. See y'all next time. Bye.
I should mention, because I believe it was Paul had asked about the guest star in the previous episode. And in this episode, Officer, was it Kathleen?
Kathleen.
Yeah. She's played by Jessica Steen. She was in Armageddon. But she's also done a lot of Canadian stuff. But she's in a show called Heartland, Flashpoint, and NCIS.
Okay.
So that's probably where a lot of people will know her from.
And I have to say that her middle of the road
Midwestern
accent did not bother. I was totally cool with that, but it was when they started with the Southern accent that bothered me.
Yeah, well, I mean, people can relocate all over the country. The Peacocks of home were in Pennsylvania.
Well, I realize that, but that old house had been in the family. It did not seem as though they had relocated recently.
Yeah, I suppose.
There's a lot of dust on that banister, I'm just saying.
All right. It takes a long time to get all those trophies in there, even if you're taking 2 a year.
Exactly.
All right. Well, does anybody else have anything left to say on this episode?
Nope.
All right. Then we're going to ask what our homework for next week is.
What's our homework?
Homework for next week is Season 1, Episode 16, Shadow.
Well, hopefully nobody has a brain tumor.
It is not a tumor.
Well, somebody already did, right?
Yeah.
That's right.
So, it's Shadow. It's another one of those one-word titles that could mean almost anything. I'll go with a shadow that takes, you know, it's an actual shadow, but it still takes people somehow.
I'm going to say it's like the long lost family dog.
I used to have a dog named Shadow.
I know, it's a great name for a dog.
So that's what we're doing next week is Shadow.
Do you want to point out that there is an opportunity for another commentary coming up if anyone's interested. Not for Shadow, but the episode after that. So
okay.
I may try and get in touch with Yvette again and see if she wants to go in for that.
Okay. All right. Well, I think it's a late enough hour that we're all ready to say goodnight. So
from all right, thanks everyone.
Minnesota.
Yeah, from the North Woods of Minnesota.
This
is
okay.
Paul and Darcy saying happy hunting, which is, you know, seems inappropriate for this episode.
Oh, I wonder what it, oh. Now I'm scared. It's, you know, we really do live kind of in the middle of
nowhere.
We do back onto forest. It's a bike trail forest, but it's still forest.
There's still weird blue lights back there sometimes.
Those are bike helmets.
I know. Still freaking
Bye, everybody.
Out.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Good night.
You have been listening to the IdgitCast from QuadrupleZ.com. Visit our Facebook group at facebook.com/IdgitCast. Email us at IdgitCastPodcast@gmail.com. Please use the episode title in the subject line. You can call our voicemail line, 206-309-9389. Please name the episode early in your message. The theme song for the IdgitCast was written and performed for the show by Borrowed Trouble, and the vocalist is Allie Jones. Find the band at borrowedtrouble.com. The closing music you are hearing right now is Too Good, written and performed by Jack Mangan and is used by permission. Find more music by Jack, as well as humor, fiction, discussion, and a variety of other goings-on at jackmangan.com, home of the Deadpan Podcast. Would you like to hear more from the hosts of the show? You can find John Pavlich on CastleCast, also from QuadrupleZ.com, and his own Sofa Dogs podcast at sofadogs.libsyn.com. Yvette can also be heard on Investigating Mars, also at QuadrupleZ.com. David Bushman is one of the hosts of the Pop Culture Wars podcast at Facebook/Pop Culture Wars. Get in touch with Darcy for apparel design needs at Facebook.com. Search for Cyan Fey Designs, CYANFEY Designs. And you can also hear Darcy and I on the Ghostlight podcast, an introcast for the television series Slings and Arrows at QuadrupleZ.com.
She never eats.
She doesn't eat. Look at her.
Skin and bones. She doesn't look it.
Yeah, it's called hair.
Well, she is a long-haired cat, so I suppose it hides the skin and bones somewhat, but I think she's not.
I can't feel it.
Okay, that's a good sign.
Come here, baby. Go snuggle Iris today. Girl, don't bite. Here, you want the cat?
Oh my God.
All right, John. Well, I think we've got an early start tomorrow to go hit the state fair. I know that yours is bigger, but only by a little bit. Ours is pretty
I don't really attend, so it doesn't matter.
And I know
we forgot to mention the Texas Chainsaw Massacre.
Yeah.
Again, another creepy family. Okay, but at any rate.
Yeah, I know you got deep-fried butter down there, but we got good stuff up here.
We have deep-fried Twinkies.
We have walleye macaroni and cheese balls.
We basically have deep-fried anything.
I know.
Here,
yeah,
so.
We do too. But
we have a fair amount of on a stick in this state.
Well, on a stick or deep-fried.
Mm. On a stick is the
cliche.
Have you
tried any deep-fried Oreos or Snickers bars?
No. But I think my mom has.
Okay. Well, don't forget that the deep fried candy bars is Scottish and not Texas.
Now, I've had a
fried
turkey leg.
Yeah, that would be tasty.
And that's delicious.
I eat that right up.
Yeah.
It's really tasty.
We have smoked turkey legs.
Yeah.
Because did you know that Minnesota is the top turkey producer in America? Did you know that?
I did not know that.
Yes, we are.
I can believe it.
Maybe I've heard it somewhere, but...
A whole lot of turkeys around here.
Okay, I think just took a turn.
Did you know that turkeys are so stupid that if it's raining, they will tilt their heads up and open their mouths to drink rain, but they will literally drown themselves.
That's right. That's why in all of the turkey farms, you can see them around here. They have they're sheltered, so the turkeys can't be rained on.
So they don't do that.
Do that, and then you lose all of your turkeys.
Free range, prematurely killed by rain turkeys that have been sitting in the freezer for a long time. But it's natural. It's more natural, right? People get the
we don't do free range around here that I'm aware of. But there are a lot of wild turkeys. We have a problem with those, actually.
Well, we got the free range turkey the one year, didn't we?
Maybe.
The special purchase turkey in Lincoln at the place across the street from the East Street House.
Oh, that's right. You're right. Ideal market.
Do
you guys have Ideal down in Texas?
No.
I thought Ideal was an independent.
No, it's a chain.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it's a small chain, but it's a chain
of sort of small neighborhood stores.
Yeah, that's what it is. It's pretty cool. Well, we'll let you go.
Alrighty.
Yeah, I like to hang out and chat, but...
Yeah, it's time for bed. I'm tired.
Samuel's brackets, really?
I was going to go with hunting photos, but then that popped into my head and I couldn't resist. So sorry.
You're just a diehard Quantum Leap fan.
I really am.
All right. Okay.
Well, that's Beckett.
Yes.
Yeah, Samuel's brackets, Samuel Beckett.
Yes.
It sounds right. That's what I thought you were going for. What did everybody else think you were going for, apparently?
He thought that Beckett, yeah, that was right.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right.
There you go. Just waiting for Godot, you know.
Yeah, I didn't talk about it during the voicemail, but I also agreed with Heidi that you get the other Beckett and Castle.
Yeah.
Vibe a little bit.
Sure.
Sure.
Well, one is a cop, so.
Yeah, that helps.
All right.
One is a cop, and one sticks his nose in where he doesn't
have to.
Well, he does have to in this episode. Okay, well, all right. We'll stop with all that and stop down this recording and say goodnight.
Goodnight, Mr. John.
Goodnight.
Always enjoy podcasting with you, sir.